Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive to HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. And if you are tuning to Drive to HR, hit the hashtag DTHR on Twitter and give us a shout out. And if you have any questions to our guest, shoot it on and we will be able to pull that up. So without further ado, let's get right to it and meet our guest, Kristen Harcourt. Kristen, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Hi, Nisha. Wonderful to be here again.
Well, thank you so much. It is so nice to hear your voice again. So you know the drill at Drive Through HR. So, Kristen, why don't you kick off the show by telling our audience who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. So my name is Kristen Harcourt, and I'm a senior consultant with the McQuaig Institute, and I've been working with the McQuaig Institute for 7.5 years. And I work with organizations on various areas of talent management. So we have an assessment tool that helps organizations get a better feel for individuals, their behavior patterns, their personality, in turn making better decisions for hiring, developing, coaching, leadership development, team building, really everything to do with people and making better people decisions.
Wonderful. So you are at the heart of HR industry and what's going on in the HR industry. You know, before we get to that question of or the theme of implementing new HR initiatives, I know you are here to talk more about that. But before we get to that, where do you see the HR industry is headed in the next 5 years?
Yeah, I think it's exciting times. I think a lot of things are changing. I think new generations coming into the workplace are asking for different things in our workplaces, and organizations are having to adapt accordingly. So I see a lot more flexible work places in terms of where people are working. So people working from home offices, having flexible schedules. I don't think it's going to be 9 to 5 much longer. I think that for a lot of types of positions, it's going to be about productivity and when you get your productivity, and as long as you're delivering results, it's not necessarily going to be about a 9 to 5 work day. I think that's pretty interesting. I think definitely I've been going to quite a few T-chats lately, and I think one of the things that I hear a lot on that chat is how technology is evolving and how there's HR tech is huge, and analytics and being able to use big data to make decisions, and I think that's going to have a lot of impact. And I think one of the things HR professionals need to have is really that ability to be able to look at analytics and be able to take the data and see patterns that exist and see what's going on behind the data and be able to have that ability to analyze and really understand what the data is saying. And I think sometimes it's not as simple as it may seem. It's really digging deeper to see what the data is actually saying and then being able to make more informed decisions based on that data.
Great.
So many interesting things, yeah.
Great. That's wisdom right there. Thank you for sharing that. So, Kristen, you and I talked a little bit about it. You know, this month at Drive Through HR, we are asking our guests to share their art of failure and success stories with our audience. So, and you decided to talk more about, you know, the tips for successfully implementing a new HR initiatives. So that could be a great segue to talk about, you know, the failure and the success. So what would you like to tell our audience when it comes to implementing a new HR initiative?
Yeah, that's a great way to get into it, because I think you're absolutely right there, Nisha, when you start looking at success or failure. I've just seen over the years a lot of different patterns around, even when we're working with clients or we're working with organizations, why some implementations of a new HR initiative go really well and why some don't. And I think it has a lot to do with how they've really set it up for success. And I think there's many different phases and things that need to happen for something to to be successfully implemented. So I'd love to, you know, talk about some of the things that I've noticed with clients who have done things well, and some of the things that they've done differently that have really seen them get great results and successfully implement something and really get those measurable results that they were looking for. And then why in other situations, you know, they had the best of intentions, but why did the new HR initiative fail, and what are some of the patterns and things that I've noticed in those situations as to why it might have failed?
Mm-hmm. Well, before we talk about, you know, what works, let's talk about why it did not work and what were some of the failures that your clients have faced, and how did they overcome that?
Yeah, so hopefully when they're working with us, our clients didn't fail as much that they got the results that they were looking for. But one of the things that I found is, and it might not necessarily be about using our tool, but they've tried other HR initiatives and kind of learning from what didn't work well in those situations. We've tried to really rectify it and do things different in this situation. And just to kind of talk about one of the things that we also do with our clients is that we have a very structured implementation plan, and you can almost think of it as a one-year onboarding process with a client, so to really help set them up for success. So when you start to talk about failures, you know, some of the things that I've noticed is right from the beginning, I think one of the really important pieces is that you need to get executive buy-in for this initiative.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's critical, and I think everybody realizes that. But in terms of selling them on the idea and getting that buy-in, I think it's really helpful to be able to make sure that when you're addressing initiatives that you're really getting at measurements and getting at metrics that mean something to the senior executive team. So it's really about doing your homework to figure out, well, what are the things that they're paying attention to? What are things that they want to see improve, so that when you're talking about an HR initiative, you're really talking about how it'll impact these measurements that they're looking for. So kind of that risk and reward. So if they're looking to decrease turnover, if they want increased revenue, more productivity, if it's about their corporate image and the branding or better union relations, whatever that may be, it's really understanding what are those things that are really important to them, so that when you start talking about this initiative, you can show how it's going to measurably improve those things that mean something to them.
That is true. We need to get the buy-in from the executives as well. So, you know, you talked about that implementation plan and then going forward to getting that buy-in from the people, the key people that we really need to involve in that strategy. So tell us about, you know, is it a top-down approach initially, and then how do we go about, you know, in terms of reversing that from bottom-up approach so that we can get the buy-in from the employees who are going to use this initiative in that organization?
Yeah, and I think that's critical, and I think that's it really does. I still think it has to cascade all the way down, but I think where it starts is that senior executive team, it's not just about them signing a contract and saying, okay,
mm-hmm.
we're going to do this HR initiative, but it's that they believe in it and they want to see the results and they are pushing it through the organization, and then it cascades down, right? So if they're saying this is an important initiative, then the next step is also helping those senior executive team help their management team understand, well, this is such an important initiative. And then those managers, it's about getting their employees to understand, well, this is such an important initiative. So I think it's really important that it does cascade down, but I think what you're kind of getting at over here with this, Nisha, is also the importance of when you start to come out with a communication plan, how that's communicated is going to be different for different stakeholders. So if
sure.
we're looking at the employees, it's critical that the employees understand what's the initiative, why are we doing this initiative, and the most important, what's in it for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those employees need to understand that. But at the same time, in terms of it cascading, those managers who are helping those employees understand, they also need to know the same things. What's in it for them? Why? What's in it for me? And, you know, how are they going to be held accountable as well, right? So if from the executive team all the way down, how are those people being incentive and having accountability to have to communicate this out to the organization and have people actually embracing whatever this new HR initiative is going to be?
So those are the three key questions. What, why, and what's in it for them, right?
Exactly.
So you talked about, the incentivizing factor. So have you seen some of your clients are using that as an opportunity to kick off their HR initiative successfully in the very beginning, like incentivizing or using some of the tools like gamification or something like that, some of the key practices? What are you seeing?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think it's important that in terms of incentivizing them, that's like, what are going to be the things, how are they being rewarded, and what kind of recognition programs might be in place for this new HR initiative for being embraced. And that, again, goes all the way down to the from the employee level to the manager level as well, right? So what kind of rewards and recognition programs exist for them? I think the other thing that's really important to talk about as well is that it's not just about communicating it into the organization, but it's also how are you going to sell it internally, right? So how is mm-hmm. that? I think this is another thing that has a huge impact on how an initiative is really embraced is how are you going about selling it internally? Like, how are you communicating it out? Are you having town halls? Are you having success stories? Are you sending emails? Is it a combination of everything, right? Because people are going to get the message in different ways, right? Some people will embrace it when it's coming through emails. Other people want to have someone talking to them face-to-face and telling them about what this initiative is. So different stakeholders want to be communicated in different ways. So I think it's important to have not just one method of communication, but several different ways that you're getting this out to the organization.
Correct. There is no one-size-fits-all. And it really
exactly.
depends on the demographics and really depends on the initiatives that you're going to do. So
exactly.
In the very beginning, you kind of talked about, how do we go about get the buy-in from the executive and what are some factors that they really value the most. So that thinking about asking the question about metrics. What are some metrics that you see that executives value the most, and that's where HR need to focus on in terms of presenting this business case to their executives?
Yeah, and I think what you bring up is an important question, and it is about asking questions, right? It's about doing your homework and understanding for your organization. If you
mm-hmm.
think about those senior executives, what are they bonused on, right? So
right.
what are they being told? Like, this is what you need to, this is, because whatever those senior executives are being bonused on, that's what they're paying attention to, right? So I think as an HR practitioner, HR executive, it's really your goal as well to really be very, very well informed around what are those things for them, what's keeping them up at night, what are the things that they really need to improve on. And I think one of the things that happens sometimes is, again, going back to that one size fits all, well, it's different for every organization, right? Those priorities are not going to be the same for one company's priorities is very different than another company's priorities. So I think it's about doing that homework, having conversations with several different people on that senior executive team, doing a lot of listening, lots of questions, lots of listening, lots of probing, so that you're very clear around these are their priorities, and then you can link to those priorities. Okay, well, this is how this HR initiative is going to solve this problem, and guess what? These are the metrics that we already have in place to be able to show you a before and after. Like, they want to be able to see those measurements. So, turnover, for example, we see our turnover right now is at 80%. Well, we want to get that turnover down to 50% or 40% or 20%, whatever it may be. Well, this is the before. Now we're going to be bringing this HR initiative, and 12 months, 18 months in, I'm going to be able to show you, and we're going to have those metrics to see how those improvements have taken place.
Great. So it's not just about measuring it at all. It's about knowing what to measure. That is also key, as you said.
Yes.
So in that case, would you recommend to our audience some of the tips, maybe thinking about some of the five key metrics that is probably the general metrics for any other initiatives in the HR industry? What do you say?
Well, I mean, in terms of HR initiatives, I mean, a lot of the things that you're wanting to see are some of the things that I measured that I was mentioning earlier, right? You want to have a lower turnover. You want to have increased retention. You want to increase that performance. You want to, if you look at things like succession planning and that kind of stuff, you want to be able to be identifying high potentials. You want to be hiring that A-level talent. So being able to look at those streams and having those individuals that are coming in, and you might be starting here, but moving them up through the organization into leadership roles. Engagement is huge too, right? So how are you doing things to measure engagement? Because one of the other things that you see a lot of is presenteeism. So individuals who might still be there, they're working, but they're not actually working at their maximum capability, right? So looking at individuals who are engaged and having metrics around what are your engagement levels. So those are things where you can be doing employee surveys and paying attention to that kind of stuff. And a lot of times when I talk to clients, there's a lot of things that they already have in place that they are capturing those metrics, but it's sometimes just taking a step back to see, well, where are you? Where is this information housed? What kind of metrics are you currently paying attention to? So that now we can look at, I think when you want to be bringing an HR initiative, you want to be able to show those success outcomes, right? So this is where we saw the retention before, or this is where the engagement levels were before, and this is where the engagement levels are at now.
Right. So it is turnover, retention, productivity, succession planning, and then engagement. And I really wanted to tackle that engagement factor a little bit, because when we talk about, you know, HR initiatives or even engagement, the things are a little blurred. Organizations, they normally go about and do their year-long employee engagement survey, and then they don't do about it. So what do you recommend to our audience when it comes to fixing that engagement factor, and how do they go about in terms of creating an employee engagement initiative from the scratch onwards?
Yeah. I think it's also important, you know, what does the trust look like in the organization? Because at the end of the day, if there isn't, if the organization's not built on trust, you're not necessarily going to even get accurate data to begin with, right? So I think there's a lot to be said with not just about doing surveys, but HR really taking the time to go around and talk to different people in the organization and have those one-on-one discussions and hear what people are saying, as opposed to just anonymous surveying. I think there's a lot of value in HR really having their foot in the door in lots of different places in the organization, whether that's the senior leadership team or whether that's just managers, hiring managers, or whether that's employees, but really hearing what they have to say so that they're getting a really diverse cross-section around different parts of the organization. Because the other thing that can happen as organizations are quite siloed, some parts of the organization could be doing really well, right? Their culture and their engagement in that part of the organization, let's say, for example, IT. IT is doing really well, but it's the call center that's having trouble. Or sales is doing really well, but it's marketing that's having trouble. So I think it's also getting a feel for the cross-section and really going out there and having conversations. The other thing that I think that's really important is that there needs to be accountability. So if you start to say, from an engagement perspective, one of the things are, you know, our leaders need to become better coaches. I mean, there's a really interesting quote, and I think it's quite impactful. 2/3 of employees quit their boss, not the job. So the organization could be doing things well, and in terms of, you know, people do like their job and they like what they're doing day to day and they find meaning in their work and that kind of stuff, but the engagement challenges are coming from their leader, because their leader is perhaps either micromanaging or not taking an interest or not giving any feedback. I mean, one of the things you hear a lot with millennials, with them coming up in the next generation, is that that real time, they want coaching, they want ongoing, they want to get real time feedback. So for those leaders, you know, there needs to be some accountability for how they're coaching, how they're engaging their employees. And if there's accountability there, they also need to be giving support and be given training and give help around how to even coach employees, because a lot of people get into leadership positions and they have no idea. no mm-hmm. idea how to coach and develop, and they're afraid to even say that they don't know what they're doing or how to approach that. But the other thing you see sometimes is that the organizations are actually rewarding negative behavior. So you have these leaders who are, you know, not embracing a positive culture. It's having a huge impact on engagement, on turnover, on retention, all of that kind of stuff. But they're the way things have been set up in that organization, they're actually being rewarded for that negative behavior as opposed to there being accountability. So I think some of a big thing around engagement is really empowering leaders. Because I think that manager-employee relationship is has a huge impact on engagement.
All right. So let's give a big shout-out to our audience who are listening to Try2HR. Thank you so much for tuning in to Try2HR. We are talking to our wonderful guest, Kristen Hardcore, and she's talking more about how to go about when you are implementing a new HR initiative. So tune in, and if you have any questions, hit the hashtag DDHR, and we will ask that question on the show. So, Kristen, this is kind of an interesting take that you said right now, rewarding negative behavior. It's not normal, right?
Yes.
It's not at all normal when you reward a negative behavior. So, and that itself is, I guess, some of the organization who probably don't have a better culture, but still survive in the industry, I guess. But how long can they go?
You think that, unfortunately, I see it more often than I would like. It might not be overt. It's not to say that, mm-hmm. So I remember I was having a conversation recently around bullying, right? So bullying mm-hmm. it can be when it's overt bullying, right? So when it's very, like, it's verbally abusive and everyone around sees it happening. I think with things like that, there's more accountability. I think it's when there's types of leadership that are not quite as, I think that happens still, unfortunately. I see it happen a lot, way more mm-hmm. than I would like to see it happening. But I think what also happened is when it's not as overt around the leadership, right? So if you see one where it's micromanaging, so that individual is given no autonomy, an opportunity to kind of learn things on their own, that manager is kind of always there. I see micromanaging happening a lot in still organizations. And then the other one is where you also see where there's no support. Like, people want to have feedback. People want to have conversations with their leaders. And I think one of the things that's happened sometimes with technology, actually I was just reading an article recently that was talking about that what's happening a lot of times with leadership is that there's that lack of connection with the leader and the employee because they're not getting as much of that human connection, right? Because they're communicating via email, they're communicating via telephone, or they're doing, they're not even, they're remote employees, so they're just having conversations through a go-to meeting. And at the end of the day, individuals still feel more meaning and feel more connected to the organization when they feel connected to their manager, right? So I think some of those things around the negative behaviors, it's not necessarily overt, right? But if there's no connection between that manager employee, if they're not taking a vested interest in that individual, and again, going back to the coaching and development and talking about their career path and all of that kind of stuff, it has a huge impact on turnover. People are going to leave the organization, and a lot of the things, and I hate to group the millennials because every millennial, I think every person is very unique and we all have our own things. Mm-hmm. So I think some of the generational stuff, I try not to do too much of that because I think each individual is also unique. It's not, you can't say a whole generation does the same thing. But you definitely see with some of the stuff that's with millennials that if they don't have leaders who take an active interest in them and coach them and develop them and talk about what they're doing well and what they could do to improve, they're going to leave the organization. They expect that.
Correct. Well, I totally agree with you. Well, what you have right now may be good or maybe okay, but what if you can make it great by providing a better employment experience to your own employees? So I totally agree with you. And my next question that I really wanted to ask you is about, you know, I've been talking to a couple of HR generalists out there yesterday, and then I was wondering, here we are talking about the big things on the radio show, you know, the big data and delivering the results or taking the informed decisions and see where the HR industry is headed and utilize that to make your HR better at your organization. But going back to that trench HR generalist, they are still thinking about or fearing about the changes that can happen within the organization. They're not. I don't think they are still ready to kind of embrace the new things or the new norms that we have in the HR industry. What do you think about it?
For sure, sure. There definitely are. You see some. I think it's getting better and better. I think it's like anything, right? Some people are more change oriented than others, and I actually don't think that's necessarily about HR. I just think it's around. That could even go to some, a lot of the things we talk about with McQuaig and personality styles. Some mm-hmm. personality styles are much better at dealing with change, and others don't. They're not those early adopters. They take a lot longer to get buy-in for it. For a long time, you'd hear people say, oh, this social media stuff, it's going to be gone in a second. Like, this stuff's not going to last. Like, I don't know why people are getting involved in all this social media stuff. Well, as we can see, it's not going anywhere. And, I mean, social recruiting and everything that comes along with that is huge, right? So I think it's like anything. I wouldn't necessarily say HR, like all HR generalists or HR as a group aren't willing to embrace change. I think it's like any group. Like, you'd find some people in other pockets of the industry, other pockets of the organization that might not be in HR. They could be in operations or they could be in marketing. They could be in sales. I hear salespeople now like, oh, no, the social media stuff, no, it's not. That's not how you sell to your customers. Well, that it's building relationships. That's where your customers are, right, or your prospects are. They're on social media. They're going, when they come to see you, they've already done lots of research. They're way further in the buyer cycle. But even with that, there'll be a lot of sales professionals for a while that will just say, no, I'm not embracing that. It'll take them another 10 years before they miss the boat, right? So I think I definitely see a lot of HR people who are really, really evolving, and that a lot of great stuff happening. And then there's some people who are like, no, I can't do that stuff yet. But I think it's more about the person and their personality and how good they are with change.
Mm-hmm. And I guess from an organization point of view too, I think that if your organization is not ready yet, and even if you are an HR in that organization and you really wanted to implement some of the new initiative, but if you don't get the buy-in, as you said in the very beginning, from your executives, and if you feel like your organization is not ready yet, then I don't think you can lead that board, right?
100%. And sometimes it's baby steps. A lot of times, mm-hmm. even when we're working with organizations, they start using it in one area and maybe start just using us with hiring, and then move a little bit more to coaching and development, and then a little bit more to leadership development. And then before you know it, they're using it as an end-to-end talent management cycle tool. But they didn't do that right away. They slowly got the mm-hmm. buy-in because they realized they just weren't ready for it to be all in, because there's no way. Like, people would have been like, what is going on here? This is too much.
You know, it's funny because the other day I talked to an HR professional, and she's like, no, we don't really want to implement something new. We wanted to focus on the sustainability and what we have right now. And, let's focus that, or let's think about that new change that you have proposed maybe sometime later down the line after 2 years or 3 years. And by that time, I don't know, things might have been different. Anyway, so, Kristen, we are talking about more on the art of failure and the success story. So I really, really wanted to get your personal story as well to our audience. So tell us one time that you really, really, I don't say the word failure, but then disappointed in the way. How did you overcome that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've learned as I get older and wiser is there's something to be said about pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone. And The first time you do it, it might not go the way you want it to go, but it's practice, practice, and practice. So, for example, I really like doing speaking engagements, and I do a lot more speaking engagements now, and I have over the last 3 years. But when I think about when I first started doing, you know, my first speaking engagement, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, mm-hmm. I don't think I was that good. Like, there's a lot of things that I would change about it. Afterwards, but what I've learned also is to not be a perfectionist and also just learn. The best way to get better is just put yourself out there to practice and get better and better and better. So instead of just, like, cutting up all the things like, oh, I should have done this and I should have done that and why didn't I do this, I learned from it. I'm like, well, I would have preferred if I did this, but now I know for next time I'll do this. And then next time I'll perhaps position this a little differently. But the only way to get better is to put yourself out there and take some risk. So I've learned more and more. And to be honest, that's where I find you feel the most alive, is when you're challenging yourself and pushing yourself to do things that feel difficult. And then that's where you get that that amazing feeling once you push yourself through and you've been able to do it. And you master it, right? But it takes time to master things. And I'm an impatient person. So I find you just want to be right at 100% right away, but it's just not possible. The only way to get better is to put yourself out there and really, really practice and get more and more experience.
Correct. Sometimes that do it right at the first time, that way might not work, but then, as you said, consistently learning and consistently pursuing your aspirations and working towards achieving that would definitely give you a solid results. So tell us, what would you do when you know you failed in a project? What are some of the 3 points that you would go about in terms of analyzing that and then coming up with a strategy that's going to help you improve and come back?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, for myself, if it's an opportunity and it's a project and you work with other people, I'd be asking them, you know, what did I do well? What could I do better next time, so that you're learning from your mistakes? So I know for myself, I love coaching and feedback, and any time I can get insight from other people about what did I do well, what could I do better? So I think asking anybody, if you can get some direct feedback from them. I think, you know, even doing things, I'm really into journaling, and so writing things down and, you know, what worked well, what didn't go well, what do I wish I had it done differently, and I find the best way for myself for learning through trial and error is to kind of write out what went well, what didn't go well. And then, you know, again, trial and error. If you tried one thing and that didn't work well, then try going about it a different way the next time, because that's the whole that definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, right? So if you did something and it didn't work and you do it again and it didn't work, well, then the only way to make that different and get different results is to try things differently. So I think it's also pushing yourself out there to sometimes try doing something completely differently than you were doing it in the past, and you can be pleasantly surprised.
All right. So you are an international speaker. So tell our audience some of the speaking, public speaking tips that you normally use before you get onto that podium.
I think it's doing your research ahead of time and being clear about who your audience is, so that you're really customizing it and crafting a presentation that's going to speak to them. I'm a big believer in storytelling. I think people get more emotionally connected to your message when you can use the storytelling and they can really relate to what you're saying. I think the other thing that's really important is being yourself, to be authentic. Don't try to be somebody else. Be yourself. Mm-hmm. Be genuine. Smile a lot, because people want you to succeed, right? Like, they're there, they're rooting for you, they want you to do well. So, you know, engage with your audience and interact with them. And for myself, from a speaking engagement perspective as well, I think anything you can do to help your audience engage with you, so it's not just lecturing and educating, but so that they can have interactive learning as well.
All right. So for those professionals who wanted to pursue public speaking, how did you pitch in your first speaking engagement?
The first couple of speaking engagements I would have done would have been voluntary, so I wouldn't be paid for them, and they could have been organizations that were just desperate for speakers. So maybe it's an association event, or you know, it's just something where, even classes. I remember when I first started getting into to speaking, I would go and speak at with HR classes, right? So where they were doing a certificate program, and maybe one of the classes is on recruitment and hiring or talent management. They're always looking for speakers, right? So I would go out and volunteer and talk to those people, and it's just practice. The more you get out there, the more you're talking, and then, you know, referrals start to happen, and people say, oh, you know, she was great, and then tell somebody else about you, and then next thing you know, it kind of snowballs from there. But I think it's really just about, a lot of times in the beginning, is just, you know, offer to speak anywhere.
Right. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for being here with us today at True HR, and we learned a lot when it comes to successfully implementing a new HR initiative and furthermore. So my last question to you would be, what is that biggest leadership lesson that you have learned and that you still use in your everyday life?
The biggest leadership lesson that I have learned is to slow down and listen and don't make assumptions.
That's great. Yep, I know. People normally make assumptions in the first hand itself, and then things would go under no control. And then, I totally agree with you. And thank you so much for that great wisdom right there. So where can our audience connect with you and come and find you or hang out with you and continue this conversation?
I'm in Toronto if they want to come hang out with me. So I'm on Twitter. You can find me at Kristen Harcourt. And you can feel free to come and connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm there. And then our company website would be McQuaig.com. So McQuaig is McQuaig.com. And one other shout out I should tell you guys about. I do a monthly chat. It's called My Chat, and it's a talent management chat. We do the first 20 minutes, we interview an expert, a speaker, something to do with talent management, and then we go after that 20 minutes onto Twitter and do another 30-40 minutes with a Twitter chat. So I do that monthly. So would love for people, your audience, to come join us for our next chat, which should be happening end of September or beginning of October.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I will look out for that, and then we'll try to join in. So again,
cool.
Thank you so much, Kristen, and have a wonderful rest of the day to you.
You too. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. Bye-bye.